Good morning. Pleasure to be with all of you and to welcome here this morning. I want to lend my voice of gratitude to the fathers in the area for planning this meeting and bringing us together. Mel, thank you. Carl, thank you. Eric Blatz, thank you. Others who have participated either directly or indirectly, I want to thank you. And I want for this to signal a turning point in the state of the household to which God has assembled us here in the DFW area. Obviously, the Lord has been bringing people for some time from different places and gathering them here in the DFW area to add to people who are already here, who received the word of the Lord in times past and have been faithful stewards of that word in their lives and in their practice. And to you, who are the originals here, who initially received the word when I brought it many, many years ago, I want to acknowledge you as being part of that initial foundation. At times, when God is building, and the building of the temple is an analogy, that when God prepares the materials for the building of the temple, the preparation is done in obscurity, in the quarries, where the sound of the hammer and the chisel are not heard beyond the confines of the quarries. So whenever God has been hammering and chiseling you, and you were crying out to God, and you wondered why no one heard, that was exactly God's intention. God didn't want anyone to hear your cries except him, because he was shaping you in obscurity. It is the habit of God not to parade us in the states of our imperfection. The intention of God is to treat us with great kindness while we are becoming. That is why nothing was heard of Jesus from the ages of 12 to 30. And yet we know that there were many cries and supplications to God, because the scriptures say so. And they summarize a period of obscurity, because that's the intent of God. When people see what you have become, they assume that you are always that way. And that's as God would have it, so that you don't have to overcome the deficit that you accrued by way of your loud cries and complaints in the days of your shaping. It does not serve the Lord well, and it surely does not make you noble. And so God keeps you hidden intentionally. But in the days that God foresaw and intended, it is his great pleasure to bring you out of hiding and to show the magnificent character of himself that you so perfectly present, that you might be revealed with Christ. That's his intention. And he would have you forget the days of your suffering and your anguish. And he would have you be revealed in glory with him. So I commend the ones who held the ground from a long time back in this area, and the newcomers to you, though they may appear to be immigrants into your sphere, they too have had their own quarry experiences where they have been, like you, chiseled out of a different identity, being once assembled to a mountain, but their purpose was not to be found in being blended into the mountain. Their purpose was to be found in containing the presence of God as a temple of holiness. They too, in distant places, have been quarried and shaped. So coming here into the metro area, though they may seem strangers to you, and perhaps even interlopers, depending on your perspective, they have been brought here by the Lord and are of equal stature and standing before the Lord with you. And now it is time for a quiet assembly, apart from the sound of a hammer and a chisel. I've always been amazed at how God insists on an environment without toil, without the sound of toil, when he is assembling that which he intends to inherit. When the priests, after the temple was built, and the priests were robed to serve in the presence of God, God required them to wear linen garments so that they would not appear to be sweat on their persons, the indications of toil. And when the temple was about to be dedicated, the presence of God came in as smoke and it filled the temple so that the priests could not operate by their natural sight. They had to operate, as it were, in a type and shadow of the Spirit. So there are two stages. There's the stage of your being made ready, and then the stage of your fulfilling the purpose for which you were made ready. Sometimes, because of the arduous associated with your preparation, it would seem as though the preparations themselves are the end, and you would despair unless you believe in those times to see the goodness of the Lord in the land. So God is assembling. He's bringing people from places like Crane, Texas, San Angelo, and parts farther east and south and west to the DFW area. It's an unmistakable migration that is occurring from Baltimore and parts in Maryland. From New Mexico, I hear, and he's bringing people into this area. Now, as he does, it will require us simultaneously to reach deeper into the things of God and to spread out wider. Because, you know, it's a much greater challenge to live in abundance than it is to live in lack. The only objective in living in lack is to learn how to survive. There is no greater skill required living in lack than mere survival. If you've survived, you've done as much as is required from an environment of lack. But in an environment of abundance, you're required to learn how to rule. You're required to learn how to rule. These are distinctly different cultures. And we live in a time now where in the quarrying stage that preceded, just surviving the blows of the hammer and the chisel was the objective. But you are not designed to simply be beaten apart by God and shaped by God, to be discarded and for him to repeat the process with others. God is subtle, but he's not malicious. You were designed in all these things. You were designed to be his habitation, that he would live in you and he will live among us, corporately, as his house. and in his habitation, and from Zion, this place of perfected beauty, he would shine forth.
Hallelujah.
As he intended when he first created mankind, when he first conceived of creation. So I want to address my remarks today, following that prelude or preface, to two things. The first is the time in which we live, and the second is the intention of God from the beginning. I want to use those as boxes to frame the remarks that will follow by Michael Barrett and by Doug Allen. Before I do that, Corbett, would you stand up, please? This is Corbett Galdon. Please remain standing for a moment so that you all see who he is. This is Corbett Galdon. And he is being moved from San Angelo to here in the metro area. And of Corbett Galdon, I cannot have a higher commendation of an individual than this individual. He's a man of order, he's a man of excellence, and he's one of the finest representations of the fathers who lead this house. And the Lord sovereignly, you may be seated. The Lord sovereignly. He retired as a dean of San Angelo State University, business dean. But in his spare time, and following him all of his life, he has been a lover of the scriptures and one who has studied the scriptures, particularly with reference to the Old Testament, and has some experience with the original languages. He's written several books and to international acclaim. We recently debuted some of his work in South Africa and in Africa in general. He has recently retired and knew the Lord would move him, but did not know where to. And he had thought about, perhaps more properly, his wife had thought about the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And then there were two prophetic utterances, one by Sheba, and the other, I believe, by Barbara, that they were to move to the DFW area. They were sitting in their living room about a month ago now, and a realtor knocked on the door and told them that she had a buyer for their house. And they did not, they had been thinking of selling. So they put it at the highest price they thought the market would bear. And the buyer met their price. So not being entirely insensitive to the movements of the spirit, they concluded that perhaps the time is actually come to an end. And so I'm convinced that as a man on the authority, his presence here is by divine orchestration. And we rejoice in these things. We rejoice to see that God is bringing new people in. And with that also, he's animating a base that was already here. The Lord has been speaking to Lucy and me about our own plans. And we're sure that we have been released from New Mexico, and our time is finished there. I have held off determining where the Lord would locate us. As we have thought about where, it seems that the only place that consistently comes to mind is the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I have pled with the Lord 3 times. And
Hey, Sam, I didn't win that one. So it was my turn.
And the only answer I've gotten so far is wherever it will be, His grace will be sufficient. But that said, I am sure that I'm to come here more often. Many of you remember from before that when I used to come here, I was shown that the timing for my involvement in this area had not come. And so I went everywhere else. I hope that it is not like, as the scripture said, that Jesus returned from the wilderness in the power of the Spirit to Galilee. So I'm hoping that, I don't know that I'm hoping that the Lord's not bringing me here, but I'm open to the possibility that will come. Now, part of the overall picture is that I see that the Lord is assembling His house in different forms all over the globe. Here in America, it seems that the fashion of God causing people to migrate to specific areas is that He means to raise up things of a specific nature within these areas. For example, we've known for some time that the Lord was raising up an alternative to the medical system, which the cosmos is relegated to systems. The enemy has systems that have counterfeited and indeed in some cases have obscured the systems of the kingdom. Both kingdoms are systemic. They contain those things that are necessary for life and godliness. Because where humanity is concerned, there are needs associated with our humanity that have to be met in any kingdom. And God knows that. So the kingdom of heaven has its own systems, and the earth, or the cosmos, the alternative, kingdom of darkness, has its own systems. Needless to say, the systems of the cosmos function to enslave you and to deny you the liberties and freedoms and the abundance of life that is to be found in God, both naturally and especially spiritually. Jesus said, I have come that you might have life and that more abundantly. So the life within the kingdom is both physically abundant and spiritually superabundant. So the systems of the kingdom function to support the abundance of life in the spirit and in the flesh. So we understand that the counterfeit often precedes the real in order to predispose the minds of people as to what the real ought to look like. And the counterfeit is a deception, but it's a counterfeit in that it is not so unlike the real as to stand in stark contrast. The counterfeit bill is not like a regular 3x5 sheet of paper. It looks like, and it requires discernment to see and to be able to distinguish between the two. So the kingdoms, the systems of the kingdom of heaven and the systems of the kingdom of darkness have similarities as far as the discerning of the soul is concerned. But by the discerning of the spirit, they stand in absolute contrast, the one to the other. We have always thought that the Church of Jesus Christ was going to be somehow very different, but we had not known how different it was going to be. And I'm here to tell you that in the house of God, you will see concentrations of people for the purpose of elevating systems of the kingdom that contain life and abundance, as opposed to Sunday morning meetings and the distancing of our living from our faith. So the people who we've been watching how God has been bringing these things up, these systems up, around moving people into different areas. So for example, one with which I think we're all very familiar is the system of wellness that God is developing around Lubbock, Texas, under the leadership of Doug Allen. And people have been moved for years into that area. They've been positioned, and God is developing that as an alternative to the system of the cosmos, of which most people are afraid, or that causes people to be afraid. The biggest news that has dominated our national politics now for going on the ninth year has been healthcare. Because at the end of the day, people are afraid of not having healthcare. Doug would refer to it, and I think accurately so, as sick care. And the things that God is showing him addresses the whole man, the health of the whole man, body, soul, and spirit. And when he speaks today, perhaps he'll have something to say about that, but I don't intend to preface his own remarks. He's certainly free to speak as he's led. We've been noticing that in the Los Angeles area, there's been a concentration of artists, musicians, filmmakers, and the like, singers, artists of various kinds in the LA area. God is not afraid of any metropolitan area. You must understand that. So if he intends to plant the expression of the culture of the kingdom in the very seat of unrighteousness, then he intends to do that, and he intends to show the altar. And so there's been a collection of artists there from a number of places around the world, people of extraordinary excellence in their graces. None of this means that they are perfect, that they have fully arrived in every way, but they are noticeably excellent in the aspect that they represent. It would also seem to me that things are moving forward for technology, for a component that has to do with the use of technology, particularly social media, in the San Francisco area. That is a budding development. But here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, it would appear to me that God is bringing forth an emphasis on corporate business. This is, it may not seem that way, but this is one of the business hubs of the nation. Much is transacted here in the Dallas area. It would seem that God is bringing in an assembly of people to change the corporate culture within from here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. But I also believe that this is the mothership of religion. I believe that what has come out of the Dallas-Fort Worth area by way of religious thought has influenced the whole world. But I also believe that that ship has run aground, and it ran aground in the last election, because it played a prominent role in the nation's politics. And for better or worse, the results will stay with the evangelical church. And the unpacking of it is also going to be the mobilization of the evangelical church. I don't want to delve into that too much. But I believe at the same time, God is raising up and will put on display in this place the picture of what he always intended to have in the earth. The thing that was supposed to carry his presence, which is not the aberration that it has become by virtue of harlotry. I had thought that I would speak a little bit more to the underpinnings of these things. But I don't know that it will be more than a distraction at this point. Sufficient to say only this, that it's been a very long time since the church has actually trusted in God. And for decades, in fact, that was one of the things that I confronted when I came here. This unholy alliance between the church and the political system of the nation. It's been around in my personal experience of it for more than 40 years. And the general argument was that if the culture of the nation is favorable to the cause of Christ, then the gospel will proliferate and there will be more believers. After more than 40 years, given the developments in the law and in society as a whole, the church has absolutely lost the battle and has been reduced to a desperate clinging to an unworthy spokesman. This, brothers and sisters, represents a delusion. And it's a delusion that associates the evangelical church with a culture of lawlessness in a time that is described as the post-truth era. We who should have been known as the pillar and the ground of the truth are a ship that's adrift on the waters of falsehoods, lies, and intentional deception. And it's as much ours, if you want to refer to the evangelical church that way, as it is the opposing party's legacy. It is inescapable that these are the times. And the scriptures spoke of such times. They said, the scriptures say that the Lord will not return unless there is a great falling away, which reveals the man of lawlessness. Lawlessness is not the absence of law. Lawlessness is when every man does what is right in his own eyes. It was the condition described at the end of the book of Judges and just prior to the rise of the time of the kings. We live in a season in which truth is not measured by an eternal standard, but is the concoction of the convenience of the speakers. So much so that you can believe neither side. Because, and in fact, is not that the battle over the credibility of the media? Is that not, in fact, the battle over the credit? And rightly so, because by now it is apparent that the truth, the whole truth of a matter, is never spoken anymore. And the only portion that is spoken is to serve a pre-existing interest. And when the whole thing is shown, everyone on both sides is routinely embarrassed, but they keep it up. This can only be described as an environment of intentional deception, because a half-truth is a lie, because it does not serve the interest of truth. But we were mistaken in the first place to think that the media was the standard of truth. We were mistaken in the first place to think that the political figures could be relied upon to tell us the whole matter and inform us so that we could make accurate choices. We were mistaken because another has said that he is the truth. And he wasn't running for office. He's the King Eternal, the Immortal, the Invisible, the only wise God. He was the one who said, I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life, and no man comes to the Father but by me. And he's the one who said, and I'll send you the Comforter, who is the Spirit of Truth. And when he comes, he will guide you into all the truth. The church should never have relied upon the sayings of men whose objectives were thinly disguised in favor of the one who lived before us in the fullness of the Godhead and established for all times what the truth is. And that the religious leaders would have fallen for it and led the people of God into this false standard is the very reason why the evangelical church is now inextricably bound up with the fortunes of liars and thieves. And the delusion is so profound that an environment of fear has come upon a nation, and those who are supposed to be the light of the world are as much the carriers of fear and the proponents of fear as the ones whom they represent, whose voices are the same as theirs. It is into this environment, then, that the scriptures speak so clearly, that this day will not come, the time of the return of the Lord will not come, unless there is a great falling away. I'm here today to tell you that the falling away is all around us, and it's altogether evident. But when we were younger, they used to say, the falling away will take this form. And to describe the falling away as people not going to church anymore. Do you know what you must have before you can determine that there's a falling away? You must have a standard. Because it's the standard that decides whether or not the thing is accurate in its alignment or it's off. Anyone involved in manufacturing can tell you that the way you decide if the product that's coming off the line is substandard or on par is because you have a standard that is in place to which everything is routinely adjusted and produced. We could not have a great falling away until we had a church that represented the standard of heaven. And God is raising exactly that in the earth. We'll talk in the second session about what the standard looks like. To the measure of the standard of Christ, who is the expression of the image of the Father. You cannot have a church that meets the standard of Christ apart from a gospel of God as our Father and ourselves as His Son. Christ, the place of Jesus Christ in the order of all these things, is to show us the standard of the Father. And faith is not in asking God for particular things that will enable our human lives to continue uninterrupted. Faith is our unshakable belief in the nature of our Father. It is the prevailing reality. It is the definition of what we're foundationed upon. We know who God is. Not just who God is in terms of attributes, but we know the character of our Father. And when we make assertions about God, and when we live in the knowledge of God, we become ourselves the mirroring expression of the invisible God. You could never have had a church that is the standard of that without the message of the Father and the Son. Because we find our identities as parts of the corporate Son. Absent this message, there was nothing to fall away from. Because there was no standard defined in the earth. But that standard has come into the earth now. And that's the thing God is raising up from all these places where He has been hewing the stones to form this house. This is your personal testimony of your encounter with the living God. And indeed, He stripped you down from everything you were doing for Him, everything that you were identified with, and has parked you while He chiseled on you with hammer blows to the point where many of you despaired even for life. And indeed you died. And what you're looking at now is a resurrected people.
Hallelujah.
People who were dead but are alive.
Hallelujah.
And that's why you can't be scared, because the only weapon your enemy has is the threat of death. And you've been there, and shall I say, done that. That's why the noise of the politicians and the noise that's coming from the pulpits that sell fear is so disgusting to your spirit. For the one who has overcome death, the sound of fear is, if it's anything, it's an afterthought. That's why people are alive. Interested in living, in being, is why you can't be driven back. You cannot, it's not possible to be held by the chains or pains of death. For you're alive in Him, and your life is eternal. And your purpose then is to put His nature on display here in this earth, in the essence of who He is, as that essence is born in your persons. And from that, when that template is brought out, it is altogether apparent that there has been, and there continues to be, a great falling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well.
And what is revealed when the standard is shown is the pervasive lawlessness of the present state of the church. I have said publicly many times on different continents, there is no fear of the living God in the church. Men have created a God in their own image, and they're not afraid of their own image. They've grown bold and confident in who they have become. And they speak of a God that they do not know. And they speak of a God that they do not trust. The language betrays that their only interest in God is that he would supply what is necessary for them to keep on as they have been living for decades. In spite of the fact that many of the leadership have died tragically in ways that cannot be misunderstood as the very hand of God putting an end to their existence. Key leaders, household names, have suddenly died in ways that you cannot explain other than that the hand of God stopped them. And still, there is no fear of God. When that happens, you know what God does? He gives them over to a reprobate mind to do the things that are not convenient. In other words, as he said to Israel, I've beaten you from the tops of your heads to the soles of your feet, and there's nothing more I can do to arrest your behavior. In that instance, he says, come and let us reason together. Though your sins be as scarlet, they shall be as snow. Though they be red like crimson, they will be as wool. If you're willing and obedient, he said, you will eat the fat of the land. But if you're not, you will be destroyed. And he said, I swear to God. God said, I swear to God. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken, it means, I swear to God, this is what I'm going to do. I promise you, when God swears to God, stuff spits into happen.
Hi, Bo. Hi, Stacy. Eric? Aaron? How are
you? You're late.
Heard recently a statement. If a tree falls in the forest and no one is there to hear the sound, is it still a man's fault? You know, the guys are laughing in a very restrained, almost compassionate way. The women are saying, what's that? Daniel, do not go there. As tempting as that may be. So we live in these times, and they're characterized by lies, deception, lawlessness. It's times in which we are living. Did I miss something? I mean, is that why God been moving me from New Mexico? To bring me out into the sunshine where everybody knows stuff that I don't know? Or is this really the thing that is happening? And as you travel around the world, the good news is this is as good as it gets. I was in Argentina recently, last month or so, and the levels of corruption are simply stunning. The president of Argentina, who's I'm not sure if she's retired or has been kicked out. She was said to have 192 ranches in the country. 192 ranches. Well, that's more than most experts have. Just unbridled corruption. In fact, in many countries, it's like the gang is the government. To our south, Mexico is nearly in that state. In the Philippines, they are on the edges of that. In fact, they elected a guy who took to killing the gang members because they were that desperate. So the good news is that the thing that used to restrain was nations in their consciousness was perhaps the disapproval of the United States. That's why you suddenly have this gang mentality, and it's being exposed all over the world. This is lawlessness. In case you hadn't noticed, let me put a name to it. The spirit of lawlessness has invaded the entire world. And the people who were supposed to be part of the restraint have now fully adopted the culture of lawlessness. And if God did not raise up his people, then the abyss is our only alternative. But you were prepared for such a time as this. That's why it's so hard for you to even feel like you belong anymore. When you talk to people, whether it's in the church or apart from the church, you don't know if you can trust what they say. You don't know what their motives are. So God is establishing in these various centers the way he intends for his people to function. You know why? Because you are the light of the world. I'm not here to complain about the darkness. I'm here to announce that the light has come. And the glory of God has risen upon you. And if there is no standard in place where you are, then you are the standard. That's what's being coalesced. Now look, people aren't going to love you because you're the standard, because some men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds are evil. Remember, these things were said. So God is assembling now a people, because the hour of the house of God, the mountain of the Lord's house, shall be established in the last days. The mountain of the Lord's house shall be exalted above all the mountains. God means for what he has done in secret to become known publicly and openly. The mountain of the Lord will be the highest of all the mountains. And it's one mountain, it's not seven. One mountain that it has not invaded the systems of the world. We are not thieves, we are not invaders, we are different. We are a different people. We do not need the systems of the world, we are being called out of them, and we are being called and formed into the alternative. Because God's way is not to permeate it by stealth as a thief. God's way is to raise up the standard and say, come and see. When I am lifted up, I won't be lifted up as some nation's educational system. I will be lifted up as the standard of the kingdom, as a gift to the world, so that those who are in darkness may see the light. When the economic systems of the kingdom are raised up, It will not be raised up as an extension of Wall Street and New York. It'll be raised up as the kingdom standard, because it is not just a thing that provides a result. It's speaking about an expression of a way of life in its particularity. Without the righteousness of God as its underpinning, you cannot reform a system that is inherently a system of thieves and robbers. If it's created by thieves and robbers, it will serve thieves and robbers. And those who get along the best in it will be those who have that culture. But if it's created to underpin an abundance of life, where you're happy to go to work because your purpose, divine purpose, is being expressed through your enterprise, then it will feed your very human life. It's not apart from, it's not an appendage to the kingdom. It is the expression of the kingdom. But the problem is, the people who've been talking about the kingdom do not know what they're talking about. For them, the kingdom of heaven is going to heaven. They do not understand that the kingdom is systemic, and it fills everything in every way. And it's different. You are not of this world. You're not of the cosmos. You are of the kingdom. And a generation has arisen to the sound of this. And the excitement that is being stirred in their hearts is a reflection of the thing that God has prepared them to hear, to be, and to become. So the good news is, these are the best of times within the worst of times. They're the best of times because you were raised for such a time as this. They're the worst of times because evil had to progress to the place where it is unmistakably evil. The problem is, if you never hoped that God would, that if you never knew and therefore did not hope that God had a standard to be raised up, then you would have despaired and you would seek a compromise to keep going. But the people around you are going to yearn now, have begun to yearn for the thing they see in you that is eluding them every day. You may not have the biggest job. You may not be the person of greatest influence within the organization. But the light that is coming forth from your being is the thing that they envy, because it's the elusive quality. And they'd give anything to have it, except they're not willing, really, to give everything. That's what's going to be required. I want to pause here. I've defined, to some extent, the times we're in. Now, I want to, in the next, just take a few minutes of a break, refresh your mind, because I'm going to go in a different direction. I want to talk to you about who God is. Who God. Let's take a